and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. It may be asking a lot to assume that the weather forecast hasn't completely changed since I said this sentence out loud, but we're in the middle of an early June warm spell right now, and that's coming right after a cold snap that left at least some growers wondering whether their fields would even make it through the end of May. We're going to talk about what to look for in those fields.
Each field is going to be different, and that's why it's always a good idea to make sure that you do the best job of scouting and looking at that each individual field and as many parts of the field as you can.
Also, Canada's beef industry has reached another milestone worth celebrating on its long, weird journey through the BSE crisis.
If we can get, which we should be able to now, our export certificates lined with the U.S., that would be a game changer for Eastern Canada.
And in markets, prices for canola are still pretty hot, but there are good reasons to not expect to see four-figure canola anytime again in the near future.
Basically, there's nothing left out there to buy, no matter how much they hike up that price.
All that's coming up on Between the Rows right after this.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
Well, choosing seeding dates every year is a calculated risk, and this year was no different. And now a number of grain and oilseed growers on the prairies are waiting to see whether they're going to need to reseed, as overnight temperatures ducked well below 0 Celsius last week in much of Agro-Manitoba and some points west. Now, I'm sure none of us want to be using the F word, you know, five letters, rhymes with cost and exhaust, and it is warming up quite a bit this week. It's Tuesday, June 1st as we speak, but given what we just saw last week, it's worth talking about what affected producers should be looking for before they act further. Jason Castleman is an agronomist with the Canola Council of Canada at Fairview in Alberta's Peace Region, and he joins us now. Mr. Castleman, hello and welcome to Between the Rows.
Thanks very much.
Now, to start with the current situation, what's known about the actual extent of damage on the prairies after this past week's cooler temperatures? You know, I'm hearing that at least some of the seeded acres hadn't even really emerged yet due to just the dry conditions we've had.
Yeah, I think for the most part, we haven't seen a widespread damage. I know talking with the rest of the Canola Council agronomy specialist team here on our calls in the last few days, the amount of damage from the frost is probably minimal. For sure, there will be some fields that are at that stage that it would be worthwhile to reseed and try to get a better plant stand established. But for the most part, I think, you know, a lot of the canola crop that was seeded, like you say, was probably into some drier conditions, and then when the frost did come, the cooler temperatures, probably not all emerged. And even the ones that would have been up might not have been at a stage where the frost could have totally killed them all off.
Mm-hmm. Now, we hear gardeners talk about, you know, waiting until the May 2-4 weekend before they start planting in earnest. You know, was it really unreasonable for crop growers to want to get out there, you know, as far in advance as they did this year, especially this spring?
I don't think so. For the most part, an early seeded crop is still going to be the best chance of getting that ideal stand and good potential for yield. Seeding, waiting for conditions to get good conditions as far as soil temperature and moisture is always a best practice to not rush things to get things seeded. But at the same time, it's a opportunity to make sure that you're getting the best plant stand possible with the least amount of risk, and if it is having that soil temperature a little bit warmer, and so that the crop that's when it is seeded will get off to the best start is ideal. Mm-hmm. But waiting for you know, the end of May to start seeding, that's not realistic either.
No. Now, obviously, the temperature reading at the thermometer alone also, it's not the only factor in deciding in whether a crop is more or less likely to be damaged. You know, ideally, what other conditions would be helpful for a susceptible crop to survive a hit below zero?
Sure, and that's the challenge. from the fields that we've seen and some of the scouting that's being done, guys are seeing the fields that have a little bit more stubble. Some of that protective area could be helping protect the canola plants from the frost, where it's a bit of an insulation layer. But at the same time, some of the more open land that had some tillage and some blacker soil might have warmed up and has acted as a bit of a heat sink. So it can be on both sides, where a little bit of material grain or crop residue is helping to hold some of that heat, but it can be the other way. So I think for a lot of fields, it is just the way that things happened. I think when we have that really fast drop in temperature with some wind where it blows the heat off, and those are going to be definitely conditions that can give us some frost damage. Or if it is a slow, gradual drop in temperature, then there's going to be a different effect on the plant stand. So each field is going to be different, and that's why it's always a good idea to make sure that you do the best job of scouting and looking at that each individual field and as many parts of the field as you can to kind of get an idea of what was going on at that time.
Now, in terms of scouting, has I'm assuming that enough time has passed now that growers will know whether plant stands that had visible damage a few days ago are going to prevail or to come back.
Exactly. So the initial check on the field, looking at the plants, is more or less an idea of where things may be of concern and where to go back to. And so marking those areas off with dropping a pin on your phone with a GPS marker or a flag in the field, or just some way of being able to go back to exactly the same spot is the best practice. And at that time, you are going to see various stages of damage. So some plants that are totally gone, some that are questionable, and some that you think are probably got a pretty good chance of making it. And I know on some of the recommendations that we were seeing on social media, they were using the colored washers to highlight some plants. So ones that that were red, you throw a couple of those red washers onto the plants that are probably not going to make it. Some yellow washers on ones that you think might have a chance, and then the green washers over the plants that you think, hey, this might be okay. And then being able to come back within a couple of days, because it does take time for the plants to start to have some new green growth and see if they did make it. And it's a bit of a visual to remind yourself or look back and see what was actually going on with those plants and how you estimated them there a few days ago, just after the frost had come in.
Mm-hmm. I'd just seen that washer trick, just this spring, actually. This is the first time I'd heard of it. Has that been around for a while?
I think it was last year or two that, somebody had an idea about doing it and having us to mark it. And if you've got something handy, it's that certainly is a nice way of doing it. So it's, right away you've got, and whether it's, colored washers or, but just some way of being able to go back to the exact same spot and say, hey, this is what I saw here the last time I was in the field, and this is what the plants look like and what the difference is, because that's what you're trying to determine is, from what it was, what is it going to be?
So how many areas or just how much area or how much coverage should I be looking for when I'm out, if I were out scouting? I mean, where and how much do I need to scout?
For sure. And I think whenever guys are doing it, it is going to be, based on topography. So you want to look at as many different spots in the field, whether it's low laying areas or on the hilltops, and, kind of following that topography of the field to give you the best indication. So, larger fields, you're going to be checking on a few more spots, and it can be, looking for patterns. So if you know that there's areas that are going to be the same, kind of checking those. So trying to get as many spots as practical and getting a very good representation. So throwing a number on it, you want to be, fairly close to, stopping with the quad or the side by side or walking across the field you know, to at least 15 to 20 points and at least, you know, giving yourself the best chance. Because if you are going to be making a decision to do some sort of reseeding, that's a, you know, can be a huge investment in time and resources. So you don't want to take that lightly. So the best job that you can do to get a pretty good idea and whether you're doing it with yourself or having another set of eyes as well, helping to look at as many areas as possible, that is going to help a lot.
So if it's been a few days since a sub-zero weather event, and now what signs am I looking for on the plants themselves to tell me whether they're, you know, just resting or they're really dead?
For sure. So on canola plants, the growing point is going to be at the top of the plant. So peeling back the in between the cotyledons and looking for that first true leaf, any of that green material, any of that new fresh green leaf that's coming, looking at the stem as it's coming up, making sure that it's you know, firm and white and healthy, and it's got good moisture in it, and seeing some signs of life. If it's brown, black, dried material, then it's that chances are that's pretty much dead. So, you know, after a couple of days, if it's got some roots into some moisture in the soil, that new green growth, that fresh green material, that new life is going to be present, and definitely you know, signs of that it has recovered, and we will continue to get a plant stand out of that.
Now, I've been looking at the forecasts for this week, and at the very least, this part of Manitoba and certainly elsewhere, it's already starting to get very, very warm for this time of year. Although I just looked out the window as we speak, and it's starting to cloud over here right now, and we actually got a bit of rain, a few drops of rain. That having been said, the temperature is supposed to warm right up. I mean, is it unfair of me to say that this doesn't bode well for an unlucky grower who's trying to decide whether to reseed?
Yeah, so if temperatures are starting to warm up and dry out and trying to establish a new seeded crop of canola at this stage, it is definitely taking a gamble, and it has to be in pretty dire straits as far as the plant stand that's in the field. So you know, the canola crop can come back if you do look at it, and on average it looks like you do have, you know, ideally we want to be at least 5 plants per square foot to be an optimum stand, but we can make a crop with 2 or 3 plants per square foot on average. And a stand like that, I would, you know, think for most guys, they would take their chances and leave it. But if you don't have that, and you know for sure that, you know, there's just not enough plants to make it, then whether it is reseeded to canola or something else. And in some of those cases too, like you say, if the conditions were just not right at all to get a good canola crop established, then it might be a better option to have something else seeded in that field.
Is it too late for something else though?
I think for some guys, it's always going to be how far do you push it? And, you know, there are some options, I guess, you know, at this stage of the game, but seeding a late and changing hybrids, changing to an earlier maturing hybrid of canola can be a better option too.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll all be watching to see what farmers decide. Jason Castleman, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Jason Castleman is an agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, it's been a very uphill battle for the past several years, but Canada's beef sector has now unlocked a long-sought objective. Specifically, the World Organization for Animal Health, that's the OIE for short, has now confirmed Canada as having negligible risk status for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE for short. Now, that's the best available risk status for any country that's ever had BSE in domestic cattle, showing not only how long it's been since the country's last BSE case, but also how tight of a net the country has and will still have in place to keep the disease out of the food and feed supplies. So the question then is, now that we have the OIE seal of approval in hand, what can we do with it? And to help us answer that, we have Bob Lowe here. He's a cattle feeder at Nanton, south of Calgary, and is also president of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association. Bob, hi, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. It's good to talk to you.
You too. Now, I'd like to talk first about controlled risk status, which is of course the status that Canada has had for several years up until now. Now, is it fair for me to say that Canada's done at least as well as any controlled risk country can expect in terms of restoring its export markets so far?
I think so. I mean, we've made our way into a lot of different markets with the controlled risk status, and it's not to say we can't do better. And moving to the negligible risk will just allow us to go further in those markets.
Mm-hmm. Are there any markets out there where beef buyers have gone so far as to actually say, you know, well, we'd love to take more product from you, but our governments won't let that happen as long as you're only at controlled risk?
I don't know that if that's happened specifically. I know we do get countries wanting more of our product, but I think the risk factor is not part of that equation. I think it's because we just don't have enough product right now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, out of the markets that do still have restrictions on Canadian beef, you know, which of those could be, you know, sort of genuine game changers, like if Canada could restore full access?
I would think Asia, and specifically what comes right to mind is South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get, which we should be able to now, our export certificates lined with the U.S., that would be a game changer for Eastern Canada. That will allow packers in the U.S. to source cattle in Canada without fear of having to segregate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, you know, markets aren't made or an industry's not built on offals, but with this negligible risk status, you know, offals, if we can ship offals to some of these countries in Asia that actually think it's a delicacy, which we can now, it just adds to the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much, like, there's a lot of countries that are taking some beef, like in the form of, you know, boneless beef, UTM beef, boneless UTM beef. Now, you know, how much of the beef that these countries are taking was sort of limited anyway to the kind of goods that they're already taking?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay. Like say for instance, now you mentioned offals. I mean, like, were there a lot of countries that were there a lot of countries that were just taking, you know, boneless, you know, young boneless beef beforehand anyway, or?
I wouldn't say just taking that. Like the offals go to mainly Asian markets. Mm-hmm. And of course with our controlled risk status, that was one of the things that was limited. So they just couldn't get them. I mean, we'll actually be able to ship there now with mm-hmm. the offals.
Now, and you know, again, I hope I don't sound like I'm trying to, like I'm understating the significance of this decision by the OIE, but even with negligible risk, you know, how realistic is it for Canada to expect to gain full access to these markets? You know, thinking, you know, of course about South Korea, which you mentioned, and, you know, China, for instance, and so on.
I think it's very realistic. You know, we've built our industry on science-based trade, and the countries we trade in, I mean, we're part of CPTPP, and that is science-based trade. When we go to this negligible risk status, the science, it says that this stuff's safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's extremely realistic that we can open up those markets further.
But a lot of the countries that we're not currently doing, that we don't currently have full access to, I mean, is there a sort of a reasonable expectation that they'll all sort of adhere to the science-based adhere to science-based policy, I guess I should say.
One would hope. Mm-hmm. And assume. I mean, all we can do is assume that they're going to do that. I mean, we have, there's always politics enters into the fray a lot of times, but basically we produce a very safe, nutritious food, and food is one thing that politics really should stay away from.
Mm-hmm. One would hope so.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's only been a few days since the decision came down, but has there been any market response yet? What have we heard so far from in response to the OIE decision from international markets or even from the industry?
Oh, from the international markets, really nothing. The process now is we've compiled a list of our key priorities at CCA and the countries that we need to meet with and you know, explain where we are and where we want to be. And we'll take this list to the federal government, and it's a country by country process. It's not going to happen overnight.
And will this involve a lot of formal sit down meetings, or are there jurisdictions where governments would just say, you know, okay, we'll now that Canada's a negligible risk, we'll open it up.
Like I say, in my world, that's exactly what would happen, but it's probably going to be a little more complicated than that. I imagine it's going to be some sit down meetings and proof, and you know, it's we're dealing with other countries and other countries' governments, and all we can do is show them the facts, and I believe the Canadian government they're on our side and they're ready to push this. So, I mean, trade is what's going to make the big difference in getting us out of this economic position we've put ourselves in through COVID. And so, you know, trade's a logical thing to use to get us out of it. And so I'm presuming that it's going to be full steam ahead.
Now bringing it back to the farm gate, you know, now that we're at negligible risk, you know, what should Canadian ranchers and cattle feeders keep in mind now? I mean, are we at any risk of losing negligible risk?
Well, I guess there's always a chance that something can happen. When you take BSE, I'd say that's a really tiny chance, being as that there's only been two confirmed cases of BSE in the world in the last 5 years. You know, we virtually wiped that disease out. So, but I mean, you know, foot and mouth, there's always stuff on the horizon. So it's just, we just need to be vigilant and keep being vigilant.
I mean, vigilance aside too, I mean, you know, just with the policies that we've got in place now, and the practices and the best management practices, and the packing practices that we've got in place now, is it even really physically possible for the beef sector to slip, shall we say, that we could lose this status?
No. Well, I would say not with BSE, but I mean, foot and mouth, if we got a case of foot and mouth, that would cause some really major market disruptions. And we've just got to do everything in our power to make sure that we don't have it, don't get it. And if we do get it, we contain it immediately. You know, the faster we respond to some of these diseases, the better off we are in the end. And it's BSE, probably not, but we could lose it through other things. I mean, it's just part of doing business.
You know, I mean, that was the thing with BSE too. I mean, it was a relatively, you know, I mean, with foot and mouth, I mean, it's fairly straightforward procedures there, I guess, really disease control and containment, though, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yep. It's just a matter of what other countries will accept. We're working on foot and mouth a lot. We've got a lot of stuff, responses in, or what we would do to respond. The big thing for that is we need a vaccine bank. And that's just, I mean, that's the way out of foot and mouth is vaccinations.
Has there been any sort of insight and progress on what sort of progress has been made with foot and mouth? And were any closer to eradicating that than we were, you know, however many over the last few years?
I don't think so. I mean, some countries it's just there, and they live with it through vaccinations. It's not here. We're very particular in you know, advising the government what countries that we want to trade with and don't want to trade with, and foot and mouth is one of those reasons.
So I guess it's for us here in Canada, it's just a question of vigilance at the, you know, vigilance going forward.
It's vigilance at the border. I mean, the CFIA does a pretty good job of doing just that, watching out for this stuff.
And it's something definitely for all of us to keep an eye on. Bob Lowe, thanks very much for your time today.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Bob Lowe is the president of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Looks like $1,000 per ton canola is a thing of the past. You know, maybe not something that your grandchildren will laugh at and claim that you made up, but it's certainly something you're not going to find right now on a one-week ICE canola futures chart. Glenn Halleck of Glacier Markets Farm has been tracking the canola markets, and he's on the line right now. Glenn, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave.
So it's Tuesday, June 1st as we speak, and canola looks to be on its way up now after a few days on the downslope. Now, we'll talk more about supportive influences in just a second, but first, where was that downward pressure coming from?
That was coming from declines in the Chicago soy complex, in particular soy oil, which, you know, had been going up and up and up, and now I guess it was oversold, and guys just wanted to get out, and so the price came down.
So it's a bit of a correction then. I guess $1,000 was too good to last.
Oh, those great heydays of $1,000 canola! Like, well, it seems like they just happened last week.
Yes. Now, of course, we can't paint all canola futures with the same brush either. I mean, you know, November canola is based off the crop that's just been put in the ground, while July canola is based on old crop. You know, is it safe to say that the availability of old crop canola is, you know, it's more sort of a theoretical concept right now?
Yeah, that's the way things are looking right now. You know, most of the markets, you look at the volume, and a lot of it is just targeted in that November contract. The trading in the July contract is just a fraction of what's going on, because basically there's nothing left out there to buy, no matter how much they hike up that price. Mm-hmm. I think any canola out there has already been spoken for.
So it's safe to say then we're pretty much done talking about old crop canola.
Yeah, pretty much. It is a little bit on the early side to be talking about the end of the July contract right now, but you know, with things so tight and prices having been so high, trying to grab whatever was available out there, you know, things are pretty much done. The spec funds are moving out, and the commercial funds are moving out. Mm-hmm.
And sticking with new crop canola now, looking ahead, my phone went bing first thing this morning with Environment Canada warning of a spell of unusually hot weather here in Winnipeg over the next few days. And just before we started talking, you sent me an email there with a lot of other weather warnings. You know, surely the canola markets have that in mind as well.
Oh yeah, we are now in a weather market. You know, be here on the Canadian prairies or in the U.S. Northern Plains, you know, things are hot, things are dry. That's going to boost up prices, because it just makes that crop a little bit more uncertain after having some rain to get things off to a good start. Now we're kind of looking at, you know, things are starting to get a little iffy again.
Now, how much difference did that last hit of rainfall make? I mean, what are we hearing from out in the country?
Well, we saw prices take a bit of a tumble. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for farmers, you know, when we got those frosts, you know, because things hadn't emerged out of the ground, the frost that we did get didn't exactly hurt the crops all that much.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Canadian canola and U.S. soybeans, there's been some more rains and storms in the U.S. plains over the last little while. Are canola and the southern soy markets still linked, or are they going their separate ways now based on the weather?
Right now, I would say things are kind of iffy. You know, we're seeing in the southern U.S. plains, which are basically the exact opposite of what we're having. Things are wet down there. There's been the odd report of flooding, I believe, either in Texas or in southern Kansas. And, you know, But the most supportive thing for soybeans right now is the markets aren't sure as to how much is going to come off those fields when harvest rolls around. So, you know, even though the weather is conducive for planting, the market's got that big question mark and a red flag is how much soybeans are going to come off. And because there's that question mark, that's a little bit of supportive for prices.
Mm-hmm. And so we'll certainly be keeping an eye on those question marks and those red flags in the weeks to come. Glenn, thanks very much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Glacier Farm Media in Winnipeg, with Glacier Markets Farm, I should say. That's our show for the week. I'd like to thank our guests, Bob Lowe, Jason Castleman, and last but never least, Glenn Halleck. We'll be back in a week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. You've been listening to Between the Rows. I've been your host, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.